Ave Maris Stella, Dei Mater Alma.
Welcome everybody to the Census Fidelium Hour. This is your host Steve Cunningham at CensusFidelium.com and Census Fidelium TV. What am I at? The YouTube channel? Whatever it is. Anyways, welcome. Hope you're having a great third week of Lent. It's almost halftime for Lent. Hope you're pushing away. Keep pounding, as we say in the Carolinas. Double down. Get a little bit more into it, as you say. We're halfway there. Fast a little bit more. Do a little bit more penance. Just a little bit more. Add in. If you haven't done it more, if you haven't done much in the first couple weeks, do just a little bit more. You don't have to go all out. Just push yourself a little harder. Anyways, so Father Ripker was in town this past weekend. I was able to get the idea out to a couple of parishes in one bit. And St. Thomas Aquinas, thanks be to God, was able to bring him in. And it was a fantastic weekend over there, I heard. And my friends in Columbia thought about trying to bring him down there. So they brought him down there, too. We were able to get the right people in the right time. And the calendars met the right. The stars aligned. So it was worse because Father is busy schedule. Anyways, it was a great weekend. I'm still trying to catch up. He was over here hanging out for a couple days, and it was fun times. Anyways, let me put up his, if you haven't listened to it, St. Thomas has it up on their channel. I have mine up. The difference between mine and theirs is I have just the Saturday lecture with both day Q&As at the end. So let me play for those who did not know that it was going on, or those who doesn't know about their YouTube channel, or don't know about it being up, let me put that on. So here's Father Ripker in Charlotte in St. Thomas Aquinas Catholic Church this past weekend lecturing on Our Lady of Sorrows and Healing. So without further ado, let me turn myself off, and here's Father Ripker.
The conference is Our Lady of Sorrows, or the Most Sorrowful Mother and Woundedness. And I want to, before we get to actual discussion about wounds, I think I want to lay out just a little bit about some aspects of the life of Our Lady, which give us an indicator of how we're supposed to approach our own woundedness. Because all of us are wounded by varying degrees. Hopefully none of us are wounded in any kind of grave fashion, although there are often people that are. But we're all wounded in various ways by things that happened to us in the course of our life, things that our parents did or things that other people did to us, or even what we've done in relationship to ourselves, which I'll talk about. But before that, I want to talk a little bit about Our Lady of Sorrows because it helps to set the stage for how we are going to heal from those things. So if you actually look at the sorrows of Our Lady, there's seven of them, but I want to go through them and just make a few observations about some of them because it gives a sense of her experience in life. I think a lot of times we tend to look at things from the outside, but if we're able to see what was going on in her internally, it gives us a sense of her profound holiness. So in the first sorrow, Our Lady brings with St. Joseph Christ to St. Simeon. Now this is also the first joyful mystery, right? So fourth. So there's this presentation of Christ, and Our Lady said to one of the saints in a vision that it was a joyful mystery, but then as soon as Saint Simeon told her what we're going to talk about here in just a minute, it immediately turned to sorrow. And so what happens is Saint Simeon says to Our Lady, he says, "Your soul shall be pierced so that the hearts of many will be laid bare." And so we're going to circle around back later about what that actually means concretely, because it actually has a very important role in our own personal spiritual life. But the first aspect to this is the fact that then Saint Simeon states to her, he then, according to the Fathers of the Church, even though it's shorthand in the Scriptures, he just talks about, you know, Christ will this child will be the contradiction and the rise and fall of many in Israel, right? So that's the shorthand that we get of it. But the fathers tell us that he gave Our Lady details down to some of the most minute aspects of what he was going to go through in his passion. So at the time in which Our Lady receives that you know, probably somewhere in the age of when she was 16 or 17, she receives that information that the son that she just gave birth to, which was a miraculous birth, and then also the fact that it was announced to her by an angel, is going to be put through a brutal death, right? And so this, she began, from that time on, she had to carry the knowledge of that her entire life, that this is what was going to happen to him. And that this is one of the reasons why the saints referred to her as the Queen of Martyrs, because she died interiorly at that moment, at least in relationship to her son. And this is a profound point, because she never once blocked him in that process of leading up to that. In fact, if anything, it's possible that she was actually preparing him through his life and what she was doing as a mother, so that he would be able to go through that in a meritorious fashion, in a virtuous way. Okay, so then in the second sorrow, there is the flight into Egypt. It's at that point where our Lady has perfect confidence in our Lord. This is an important point for us today, because as we see our geopolitical situation deteriorating, and it looks like no one's doing anything to de-escalate us into heading into a pretty bad war, and then also you see in the church there seems to be this decay in the relationship to the hierarchy, where the German bishops just recently approved the blessing of gay unions, which is just absolutely contrary to the gospel. As we see these things beginning to decline, what's happening is that we realize that we might find ourselves in a situation where our situation in the church is going to be such that it's going to require a tremendous amount of trust and confidence on our part in relationship to God to get us through it, right? Then there is the third sorrow, and this is where Christ is back in the temple, and he's not in the party that's headed back to Nazareth. So there's this indicator that he's gone. And so Our Lady sorrows that his absence. This is the precursor to what she's going to suffer in the sixth and the seventh sorrow, specifically the seventh sorrow. And so this is the precursor to that, where she sorrows at his absence. It wasn't that she was afraid or that she was anxiety-ridden or what have you. She was sorrowing that he wasn't there. The fourth sorrow, then, is when Our Lady sees Christ on the way to Calvary. And by this time, he's been scourged. He's been crowned with thorns. According to the fathers of the church, if you ever see that that printout that they did of the Shroud of Turin, it's a 3D printout that they did of Christ's body. He was a magnificent man. You just see him. He's large, well-built, beautiful. I mean, he's a magnificent man, right? And yet they said that by the time Our Lady saw him on the way to Calvary, he was so beaten so badly that he was beaten beyond recognition, they said. And so this gives us kind of an indicator of, at that moment she saw this, everything that she had known, that Simeon had told her, at that moment she surrendered to it, she accepted it, she was willing to die to herself. But at this point, there's almost a completion in a certain sense of the sacrifice that she was about to undergo, because of the fact that it's at that moment that she has to be willing to turn away from what she wants, her own desires, the well-being of her son. She has to be willing to let loose of that in order for this sacrifice to be completed. And so there's a perfect dying to herself at that moment when she sees this. Then we get to the fifth sorrow. And it's in the fifth sorrow that I want to kind of make an observation that one time I had a case where the demon who was possessing him, he had actually seen Our Lady's interior life at the first instance of his creation. So if you actually look at what happens when angels are created, they call it the three instances. The first instance is that they're created, the whole hierarchy of angels, literally billions upon billions of angels are instantaneously created in a hierarchy. In that first instance, though, God also created them into a perfect act of knowing. That meant that they knew who God was, what their relationship with him was, what their assigned task was for why he created them. That meant who and what they were, their nature. It also meant they understood their relationship to all the other angels. St. Thomas says that they even saw the temptation or what would happen if Lucifer fell, who they would be under if they fell, but also the punishment if they fell, but then also the reward if they were to, what the reward would be if they were faithful. They saw the totality of that all instantly at once. And then at that moment, St. Thomas says that because they saw that intellectually, there was a concomitant delight in the will in seeing how beautiful that was, that of God's plan. And then they made their choice, which in the second instance. And then the difference between us and angels is that we're pretty stupid, right? We're dumb. I mean, all you got to do is turn on the television and you get a pretty quick indicator of that, right? In fact, it seems like the number of people carrying around weapons-grade stupidity keeps increasing all the time, right? It's like, wow, you know, okay. In fact, one time, this one woman I was watching, I have no idea. This woman, and this gives you an indicator of how dumb we are, this woman she was 15 years old and she was pregnant, and she's telling the interviewer, I don't know how this happened. I'm like, okay, I can't help you, you know, if it's on that level. Okay.
Let me get you more on the other side of this break.
Hi, everyone. I'm Dr. John Acquaviva, host of Faith and Sport here on Carolina Catholic Radio. Our show addresses the aspects of sport, character, morality, and ethics often neglected in everyday sports conversations. For instance, we discuss the morality of transgender athletes, some dioceses' decision to disallow practice or games on Sundays, and the poor habit of injecting politics into the game. But first, I want to thank you for listening to our network of shows, and in particular, our show, Faith and Sport. The Carolina Catholic media staff works very hard to bring you important and updated content directly related to our wonderful faith. And considering Carolina Catholic Media is fully funded by the listener, we need your financial help to keep bringing this programming to you. So please offer a monthly pledge or one-time donation to keep us moving in the right direction. And join me, Dr. John Acquaviva, as I discuss my two favorite topics, my faith and the world of sport, on the Faith and Sport Show here on Carolina Catholic Media Network. And we look forward to your donation.
Hi, everyone. It's Jason Murphy for the Catholic Men's Conference of the Carolinas and the Obligation Radio Show here on the Carolina Catholic Media Network. Registration is now open for the 13th annual Catholic Men's Conference of the Carolinas to be held on March 18th, 2023 at St. Thomas Aquinas Catholic Church. It's going to be an amazing day of faith, fellowship, and prayer. Of course, we'll be joined, as always, by our own Bishop Peter Jugas of the Diocese of Charlotte. We also have a great lineup of speakers, including Charles Frawney. Charles is the author of Slaying Dragons, What Exorcists See, and What We Should Know. He's going to be there to discuss spiritual warfare. Also joining us, Jonathan Fanning. He is an author, speaker, an entrepreneur, and a father. Coming to us from High Point, North Carolina, the Diocese of Charlotte, is Deacon John Clark. Deacon is a former NYPD SWAT officer and former MMA fighter. You won't want to miss this one. Scott Wieman is going to be another one of our speakers. He is with Catholic in Recovery. He's going to talk to us about addiction and recovery for Catholics. And our MC this year will be Kevin Spaulding. Kevin is a speaker, an author, and business life coach. You can go online now to www.catholicmenofthecarolinas.org. Make sure to use the promo code RADIO and save $5. We look forward to seeing you there on this awesome day full of faith, fellowship, and prayer. For the Catholic Men's Conference, Carolinas, the Obligation Radio Show, my name is Jason Murphy. God bless, and esto vir.
Welcome back to the Sensus Fidelium Hour. It's your host, Steve Cunningham. Let me get right you back to the lecture that Father Rupert gave at St. Thomas Aquinas Catholic Church this past weekend.
Right. In the offertory, there's two components. The first is you have to be willing to be separated from the particular good. This is a very important point. At one point when there's a case that I'm actually working on now, it's just about finished. The demon told me very early on, in the very beginning, that the reason for this was that God wanted him to be fully revealed in who he was and what he was. At a certain point during Mass, he full-blown manifests and starts choking this woman. And so he would do that from time to time. As soon as I finished Mass, we started the session. And after I said the initial prayers to clamp down on him so he couldn't do anything he wasn't supposed to do, I just said to him, shut up. You are not permitted to talk. Now, there was a reason for that, and that's because when he was told, and I said, he told you you had to tell me something, didn't you? Now, when you say that, the he refers to God, and they know that. And so he kind of indicated yes, and he was really angry. But I told him he couldn't talk. And there's a reason for that. Part of that is because I want him to make sure he understands that he's not in the driver's seat. He doesn't get to say it when he wants to say it. He's going to say it when he has permission to say so. 45 minutes later, I stopped the session, and I said, do you have something to tell me? And he said, yes. He said, he told me I had to reveal myself. So I just said, and I said, let's hear it. And he said, my nature is to get people convinced that they cannot be separated from the particular good. Now, he knew I knew exactly what that meant. That meant, and that means that his originally assigned task, he said, this was a few years back, he said, my original assigned task was to enlighten the mind of Our Lady to make her even more sacrificial than she was. And the reason God gave him, that's why he was called Lucifer, which means a light bearer. He was to bear the light to Our Lady. That was his primary assigned task. His secondary assigned task was to enlighten our minds to make us more sacrificial. And the reason God created him for that purpose meant that his function, he said, when he first saw Our Lady, he saw her interior life. God revealed to him at the first instance, so the angels were created before we were. In their first instance, God creates them in a full comprehension of who he is, what their assigned task is, what their nature is, what their relationship is to all the other angels, what the punishment is for not accepting the task, and also, if they did accept it, what the reward would be. So they saw, and St. Thomas says that they actually had the infused virtues of faith, hope, and charity, which meant that they also had knowledge of the incarnation and the Trinity, right? So right off the bat, he sees this whole thing instantaneously. And he said, when he saw the interior life of our beauty, he said she was so absolutely beautiful that he said he knew he would always be second best. And he said, I wanted that interior beauty for myself. So a little bit later, I said to him, this was in another session, and it dawned on me, because the thing he was beefing about was that Our Lady under the title of Speculum Justitiae, the mirror of justice. And so this mirror of justice meant that Our Lady was the perfect mirror image of Our Lady to the degree that a creature could be. So I said to him, what you really saw when you saw her interior beauty was him, wasn't it? And he said, yes, that's why I wanted to be God. Not for the power, not to subvert what God had intended, but to be that. And because I knew that I would never get that, I spat on God and I would have nothing to do with it. Okay. Now, that subversion of the sacrifice, then he said that getting people to be convinced that they cannot, it's an intellectual conviction, that they can't be separated from the particular good. He said, it's how I took Adam and Eve out. It's how I took your government out. It's how I took the church out. He says, it's how I've gotten every single person to sin. If you look at it, that is at the root of every single defect, every single sin that we've ever committed is an unwillingness to turn away from the created good. And so the first component is that unwillingness to turn away from the created good in the offertory, and then you have to turn and give the good. You have to turn away from the created good and then turn towards God and give him what he's asking. Okay. That's the first part. The second part is the slaying the victim. You have to be willing to die to yourself. And then the last is you have to consume the victim, which means it has to be completed. Okay, that's going to become important a little bit later. So he's that when Our Lady saw Christ in the fourth sorrow, he saw, or she saw, that this was it. This is what Saint Simeon had predicted, that Christ was going to be put to death. And so she was willing to turn away from the created good of having the presence of her son and also the good of his life for our benefit. So she was willing to do that. And it's at that point, in a certain sense, one of the demons said, that was the perfection of her sacrifice. Okay. Then, at the fifth sorrow, when she's standing beneath the cross, there was another demon that's actually part of this case, and I was dragging him through the sorrows of Our Lady because it was weakening him, and I was trying to get information out of him about how to get him out. And I said, what was going through? Because he also saw the interior life of Our Lady as she was going through the Passion. And he said, she was thinking to herself, this is only a sacrifice that I can offer, which is true. It's her son, too. She has a knowledge of him in a manner that none of us else had or have, in the sense that she knew he was absolutely innocent. So she knew that they were putting someone to death who was perfectly innocent. Then that sixth sorrow, he said, consummatum est is what was going on in the interior life of Our Lady. Now, consummatum est means it's been consumed. So in the ritual sacrifice, her offertory is basically her whole life, but then also her full, that she died to herself in that process. Because if you notice, she didn't try and block, she didn't try and stop Christ from undergoing the Passion. And then consummatum est, which means that the Passion that she was having to go through was now completed. In the seventh sorrow, he said, finitum est. Now, that's a distinction that virtually nobody knows. This is one of the reasons you know this woman's possessed, because she barely finished high school, and she's making distinctions, theological distinctions, that virtually most theologians don't know. And that distinction between consummatum est, or it's completed and it's finished, is we do it actually at the Mass. So if you go to Mass in the old rite, there's a certain point in which the priest turns around and he says, ite missa est. Now, ite missa est doesn't mean the Mass is ended. That's not what that term means. Missa refers to sent. It's been sent. And it refers specifically to the sacrifice, so that the ritual sacrifice is now complete. It's completed. It's consummatum est, right? And the priest also consumes the host, which is also part of the consummatum est. He turns back around, and for the first time in the Mass, the word to offer, offerre in Latin, is in the past tense. It's been offered in the Sancta Trinitas prayer at the end. Okay. So the finitum est means that finally everything she had to go through was now finished, right? So at a certain point, Beelzebub says to me, and the reason I'm going into all this aspect of sacrifice is because sacrifice plays a very key role in our healing. And it plays a very key role in why we become wounded, okay? So his beef with Our Lady was that she was, he would always be second best. And at a certain point, he said she was so beautiful. So at a certain point, I'm realizing, that's a pretty broad statement, right? So I said to him, what about her beauty didn't you like? And he said, it was the purity of her beauty. Well, that's pretty broad, too. So then I said, what about the purity? He says, it was the purity of her love. Well, that's a pretty broad statement, too. And then he said, it was the fact that when she would sacrifice herself, she never once took herself into the equation of what she was offering. She never once looked at herself in the sacrifice. Her sacrifices were always perfectly selfless her entire life. A little bit later, he said, and it wasn't just that. It was the perpetuity of sacrifice. She sacrificed herself over and over and over again and never once counted the personal cost. This means that Our Lady is different from every creature that exists, every single creature that exists. She's different from us, and the reason she's different from us is because we count the personal cost when we sacrifice or have to suffer. She did not. So that makes her different from every other human being. other than her son, who's fully God and fully man. Then it also means she's different from every single angel, because he said, I only got one shot at it, right? So that meant it didn't matter how hard I sacrificed myself, that I would never attain her level of interior beauty, that beauty of sacrifice. St. Thomas says that in the Summa, he's one of these guys that he makes these offhand comments and you realize that's the entire spiritual life summarized in one line, right? He's that kind of a guy. But he says that the one thing that God wants from every intelligent creature is the sacrifice of his will to him, referring to God, okay? And so Our Lady was the perfect example of that. At a certain point, I said, well, so if what you saw was him, then what you were seeing was God's sacrifice. Now, God doesn't sacrifice to himself, obviously. We use that term analogically. It's somewhat similar, but it's somewhat different. And by that, what came out in all of this is that God was willing to sacrifice the particular goods in our lives for the sake of greater goods in our life. He was willing to allow us to sin so that his son, the glory of his son, would become manifest, and then in our own lives, through our own defects and sins, that God's glory of his mercy would be manifest.
All right, we'll finish. We'll get to the next segment. Well, we'll get more of this in the next segment. You know what I mean for my English-speaking people out there. Hold up.
On January 31st, 2019, Carolina Catholic Media signed on Charlotte's first Catholic radio station, AM 1270 WCGC. By the grace of God, we celebrate the past 4 years and look forward to continuing our apostolic vision and mission to serve the Carolina Catholic community. We are evangelistic partners with our clergy, active parishioners, the fallen away, and the homebound. We are accessible to all Christians, agnostics, and atheists. With distribution of a wide array of content across 7 media platforms, there truly is something for everyone. During these past 4 years, Carolina Catholic has expanded to 7 media platforms that include radio, internet stream, mobile app, website, YouTube, social media, and e-newsletter. Nearly all local programs are available by podcast and video on demand. In the year ahead, we're committed to promote more local parish, school, and ministry events, more live broadcasts, and more valuable content that showcases our dynamic local Carolina Catholic community. Of all the Catholic radio stations in the U.S., Carolina Catholic is arguably a leader in locally produced programs. To continue our work, Carolina Catholic Media needs $15,000 in monthly funding to continue operations across our 7 media platforms. We are 100% dependent on your generosity. If you love what we're doing, please join us with a monthly tithe or annual gift. We have partnership plans available for parishes, schools, and ministries. If you own a business, you can be a program sponsor on one or all of our platforms. You can do a live broadcast of a special event, with promotion before and rebroadcast after. On behalf of everyone at Carolina Catholic Media, we thank you for your past support and look forward to you joining us with the resources the apostolate needs to continue to evangelize the truth of Jesus Christ and our Catholic faith across the Carolinas. May God bless you and your family abundantly.
Welcome, everybody. Steve with Sense Fidelium. Our coming at you with Father Ripperger's lecture this past week in a St. Thomas Aquinas Catholic Church. Just a smidgen of it. It's about the video I have is over 2 hours long, so it's about 2 hours and 20 minutes if you include all the Q&A. And I combined both days of Q&A, so Friday and Saturday's Q&A is all in one. So just go to Sense of Fidelium YouTube channel, type in Our Lady of Sorrows, Father Ripperger. You'll see that one's Our Lady of Sorrows and Healing by Father Rip. All right, let's get back into it, and I will be quiet.
Now, if you think about this it's a phenomenal thing. We tend not to think about how much offense God is taking by all the evil that is in the world today. And I could stand up here for hours talking about the evil. You don't need me to. You can just turn on the television to see what that is. But if you think about it, let's just say for the sake of argument that every individual, every human being that's alive only committed one venial sin per day, just one. That means that God is being offended 7 billion times a day. So the next time you get a hangnail, I don't want to hear it, right? Is what I tell people, right? But that's just venial sin. But we know that there's moral sins and very egregious sins that are happening all the time. And yet he's willing to allow that he's willing to turn away from that particular good for the sake of the greater good, which is to lead us to him and to show the manifestation of his glory, okay? So why is sacrifice then key in relationship to healing or to woundedness? Well, first we have to talk about a little bit, what is a wound? So a wound is some bad thing that happens to something good. So for example, if I wound my hand, it's because somehow or another the knife penetrates my hand and now it's cut, there's damage that's caused. So when we talk about our woundedness, our spiritual woundedness, and also our psychological woundedness, it means that there's damage that's been caused to our faculties as a result of that. Our intellect is now darkened, our will now is weak, and it has prone to malice, which is willing to choose lesser goods. Every time you sin, that's what you do. People think, well, I'm not malicious. Actually, you are. Every time you commit a sin, you're turning away from the greater good, which is to turn towards God and be willing to turn away from that created good that you want and turn towards him, but you don't. So every time we sin, we actually cause malice in our will, which means we have a tendency now towards evil. Then it also means our lower faculties, like our emotions, our irascible appetite, that's the one that has to do with anger and stuff, it becomes weak. And then our concupiscible appetite, that's the one that deals with pleasure, also then becomes prone to wanting pleasure a lot, okay? So this is damage that ends up getting caused. The second part of it is that this, another part of it is in relationship to wounds, is that it causes pain, right? So when we're wounded or hurt, it means there's a certain amount of pain that we undergo. Every single individual is wounded to some degree. We're all wounded to some degree. Hopefully, it's only minor wounds, which means that we can very often, if it's just a minor wound, it's like any kind of physical wound, we can usually heal from it on our own, right? We can just think about things, and like if our spouse says something to us that's hurtful, we can kind of just rethink about it. Well, you know, she or he is actually very good-willed. I know that they didn't mean this, and so we can kind of change our images and heal our own wounds in that regard. The other thing that we do... there's that damage. Sometimes it's grave, which means we actually have to have a physician step in. And so when we're talking about the healing of our wounds, then what happens is that the way our wounds are normally healed, especially in relationship to both psychologically, but also in relationship to our own sin, our spiritual lives, is through confession. And why is that? Because the first thing we do is we go to confession, we own up to the evil that we've done. So the first thing is that our intellect gets corrected. This in the past, I wanted to look at it from the point of view of the good. Now I'm realizing, no, this was truly evil. So our intellect gets corrected. Then we have contrition in our will, which is the opposite of choosing this evil under the aspect of the good. And then that has an effect on the lower faculties. So we go to confession, we confess our sins. The priest then gives us absolution, which then absolves us of the legal aspects of sin. See, even though the confessional is the tribunal of mercy, it's also the tribunal of justice. It's a court system. Technically speaking, people wonder, you know, where, you know, when you see a judge come in a court, he's wearing a black robe. That's an imitation of a cassock, by the way. So what happens is the priest, he's sitting there. You go, you accuse yourself of crimes against God because you violated his laws, and then you confess it. The priest's then job is like any other judge, is to judge two things. One, to make sure that your confession is integral. You've confessed what you needed to confess. The second part of it is that he's judging whether you're truly sorry for your sins. And if you're not, well, then you can't be absolved. Right, and so this is the part of the that's part of his judgment of it, and then he levies a penance. You have to make restitution for the crime that you've committed. That's what the penance is actually for. Okay, and so in fact, the church is so serious about that assigning of a penance that the theologians said throughout time that if a priest gives you too light of a penance, he's responsible for the rest of the restitution. That's how serious it is. Okay. So confession has a tremendous healing effect. This is really true in relationship to our own sins when we hurt ourselves. one of the biggest things that demons will actually use against people is harangue them about the sin that they committed in the past and how bad of an individual they are, etc. And they use those things and they pick at our feeling bad about ourselves. Now, there's a particular kind of Catholic psychology that you see from time to time, and it's this. You'll get these Catholics who realize, man, I was really stupid. I shouldn't have done that. And then what they do is they spend years flagellating themselves, beating themselves up for what they did. And the problem is with that is multifold. The first is against charity, right? Charity, you should love yourself for God's sake, ultimately. So charity is love of God and love of your neighbor for the sake of God. But it's also loving yourself for God's sake. So it doesn't terminate in itself. It's not selfish. It's about loving ourselves for God's sake. So it's against charity. The second problem is it violates the principle of sufficient reason. Now, the principle of sufficient reason says you can't give what you don't have, right? We cannot render ourselves into a state of perfection because we're not perfect. And so beating yourself up isn't going to get the job done. So it's misdirected. You have to stop that, and you have to actually turn to Christ and let him begin the process of the healing, which is the primary way that we make restitution to God. Every time we sin, we mess our faculties up, every time. And so the way we make restitution primarily is by straightening out our faculties again, and which basically means building virtue and refusing to fall into that sin again in the future. It's called amendment of life, so we have to be willing to do that, okay? But very often, the self-wounds are also the most hard for people to forgive themselves. It's also contrary to charity in the sense that you have to have mercy for yourself. Now, I always tell people, you know, we got this idea that God's mercy is unconditional. That's not true. His mercy is either for the contrite, for people who are sorry, or for the stupid, which is most of us, all right? But the point of it is that those are the two people. So what we have to realize is that we have to be, what is mercy anyway? Mercy is letting loose, and this is what forgiveness is. It's letting loose of the justice that either you should have done initially or that someone owed you when they hurt you. You're detaching from it, and you're letting loose of that original justice that they have. And people say, well, if I forgive the person, then they're getting away with it. Nobody gets away with anything. Nothing. This is always one that always, I always like dropping bombs, but this is one of them. There is no sin for which God will not give restitution for himself, in the sense that God, all of us have to stand before God at the final general judgment and account for every single infraction of his law in front of every intelligent creature that exists. At the time of the final judgment, we all assemble in the Valley of Jehoshaphat. Christ sits there, and every single person is dragged up one after another, and everybody's sin is revealed. And this is a very important point. People say, well, I thought God forgave and forget. He can't change. He can't forget. This is why we read in Scripture, his mercy endures forever. So once he forgives it, that mercy endures for the rest of eternity as long as we don't fall again. And so this is the magnificence. St. Augustine says that the greatest manifestation of God's goodness is his mercy. That means that we have to have mercy for ourselves in the sense that we have to let loose of the fact I should have done better. Well, look it. Every single one of us, without grace, there is no sin that any of us in this room could not commit if God retracted his grace. The Council of Trent says that man cannot stay in the state of grace and avoid mortal sin, even for a short period of time without grace. So what this means is either you didn't cooperate with grace or you didn't get to grace, and this is why you fell. And so what you need to do is realize, this is who I am. I'm a mess, right? And then if you let Christ take it over and let him begin the healing process, forgive yourself. You're not letting yourself off the hook because you still have to do what you can to correct the damage that you've caused, but you're not going to be able to fully correct the damage. St. Thomas says there are certain things, certain injustices in which it's not possible to make full restitution. And this is actually true. So if a woman gets raped, the guy that raped her, he can't restore her to a condition in which she was before she was raped. If you kill somebody, you can't restore that. Right, and so this is one of the indicators that there's certain things that we just have to, St. Thomas says, leave to the mercy of Christ, right? And he's going to give it to us. He wants us to be in his mercy. There's also certain people, you know, sometimes it really aggravates us. You see these people.
I'll finish this on the other side of this break for the final segment of this show. Again, if you're wondering how long, there's 59 minutes left of this. Again, just go to the channel and you'll find it.
Carolina Catholic Media News. The 13th Annual Catholic Men's Conference of the Carolinas will be held on Saturday, March 18th at St. Thomas Aquinas Catholic Church in Charlotte. Key Quarries. Who are you looking for? This Catholic Men's Conference was formed in 2010 with the objective of bringing Catholic men together throughout the Carolinas for a day of fellowship, faith, and sacraments to challenge each participant to grow their Catholic faith, deepen their relationship with Christ, and live up to their callings of Catholic men, husbands, and fathers. The day begins with registration at 7:30 a.m. with a full program of outstanding speakers, Mass, lunch, Rosary and Adoration. For details and registration, visit CatholicMenOfTheCarolinas.org. General admission, $40. For the Carolina Catholic Media News, I'm Pam Cullen. God bless y'all.
Teachers that care, professors that care about you. Just an awesome experience all around.
There's peace here. There's encouragement here.
Faculty, everybody that works here, they really set you up for success.
I don't think I have ever felt as loved and as supported and as encouraged as I have at the Abbey.
There's something here that's underlying and intrinsic. It's like a spirit of love and community. And I think the spirit is God's presence here.
Belmont Abbey College, a world away, but close to home. Visit us at belmontabbeycollege.edu.
Faith and charity are key elements of life, but are they at the center of your retirement planning and life insurance decisions? Knights of Columbus, a trusted organization, the proud history of more than 140 years of helping its members, can help Catholic families with insurance and retirement planning solutions. Most importantly, we do this in a way that is compatible with Catholic teaching and the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops Investment Guidelines. Today, we have expanded our offerings to include retirement annuities, long-term care insurance, and disability income insurance. Beyond the benefits of financial protection, members may take satisfaction in knowing that Knights of Columbus contributes to causes that align with Catholic moral teaching. Let your faith inspire your financial decisions. Terms and conditions apply. Learn more by calling Field Agent Bob Gordon at 516-551-7838.
Welcome everybody back. This is Steve Cunningham with the Census Fidelium Hour coming at you with the final segment for this show because, again, the lecture is two hours long. And there's 59 minutes from right now. This is only a 12-minute segment, so you do the math. So if you want to watch the entire thing, just go to the Census Fidelium web YouTube channel, type, or just go into a Google search probably and just type in Our Lady of Sorrows and Healing, Father Ripperger, you'll find it. Again, this happened this past weekend at St. Thomas Aquinas Catholic Church. So again, thank you, St. Thomas and Father Cobb, for bringing them in. Here's the final bit for this segment.
Usually politicians, and they get away. Everybody knows the evil they've been up to, that over and over and over again, they keep getting away with it, and nobody brings them to justice. And I always tell people, well, there's certain people in life that God just simply wants the whole thing to be revealed at the final judgment. Why? Because it's far more brutal. Now, the saints say that those of us who die in the state of grace and are on the side of the angels at the final judgment, that each time our sin is revealed, we actually get joy because we see in God the mercy that he had. So our joy, it's actually joyful for us. It doesn't bother us. By the way, you know, people say, oh, Father, I have a hard time confessing this because, you know, I'm like, look it. I've heard worse sins from people who are far better than you, so don't worry about it, okay? Everyone else is guilty of all this stuff, too. In fact, when I used to form seminarians, I used to teach the tract De Penitentia, which is the one on confession. you know, I always tell them, 95 to 97% of the sins you're going to hear are in the first month you're a priest, right? So everybody's doing the same stuff. It's not justifying it, obviously. I'm just saying, don't worry about it, okay? But we can cause damage to ourselves and wound ourselves, and the pain is the guilt afterwards and feeling bad about ourselves, okay? When other people hurt us, it means that they've hurt us in such a manner that it also causes pain, right? Okay. Wounds also require a healing process. They have to be healed. They have to be corrected. There has to be something done to us so that we can actually heal. Okay. So what does this have to do with sacrifice in Our Lady? So one of the things that puzzled me is if you look at the church's prayers in relationship to Our Lady, they always refer to her as Our Lady of Sorrows. There's only one prayer that I'm aware of in the church's entire body of prayers referring to her as Our Lady of Sorrows, where they refer to her vulnera, which is the Latin word for wounds. Now, Our Lady was not wounded. She wasn't damaged by going through the Passion. It was brutally painful. In fact, each time, many of you have probably done this, if you fast, your senses become more acute. Food tastes better. Your sense of touch even improves, right? And so as we develop virtue, the body adjusts itself to the operations of the soul. The body begins to adjust itself to virtue. That meant that Our Lady's acuteness in her ability to experience the pain was so far beyond any of ours, it's hard to even fathom, because she was so perfect in her interior life. I always tell people, look, Our Lady and Our Lord had the most tender of all hearts, right? And Christ even says it in when he appears to St. Margaret Mary about in the Sacred Heart. He's referring to the fact that, you know, his heart has been bruised and, you know, hurt so much in this whole process by what people do, the sins that they commit, okay? So that basically means that having a tender heart's not a bad thing. It's actually a good thing. But it just, and basically, tenderness of heart is the sensitivity to be able to experience the joys and the sorrows, the pain and the delights. That's what a sensitive heart is. And we should have a sensitive heart, especially in relationship to our Lord, right? But I kept wondering to myself, why is it that the church kept referring to this as her sorrows and not her wounds? So then one time I was reading in the Summa of St. Thomas, and he says, a thing can only be wounded if there's resistance to the thing that's wounding. Okay, so let's give an example. You take a knife and you stick it up against your hand, and if you don't put any resistance to it, it's going to sting, but it's not going to penetrate. It's only when I resist it that the penetration actually ends up occurring, right? And so if I don't resist somebody hurting me, or that I'm willing to suffer, it doesn't mean that I just let people walk all over me. It just means that if I'm willing to suffer anything, and I am willing to suffer the sorrow and the pain of not being able to correct myself and handing that over to God, because that's painful for us as human beings. We're proud and we want to make ourselves perfect. In fact, it's part of the natural law. We have a natural law inclination to be perfect, and that's why Christ himself said, be perfect. But we can't do that, and it's painful to have to hand that off to somebody because it's hurtful to our pride. We're not as special as we like to think we are, right? So that means then that in relationship to Our Lady, the reason she was never wounded, ever, in her life, through all of her sorrows, and remember, she carried that pain with her entire life, from the time of St. Simeon until he's put to death. She carried that pain her entire life, and all those things that she saw standing beneath the cross was brutal. One demon actually said to me, because one time I said to him, you know, it was the Feast of the Assumption, and I mentioned to him that this was the most glorious moment in Our Lady's life, and he just looks at me flatly. And you can always tell when they're telling the truth, because they just flatly tell you. No, it wasn't. Right? So I commanded to tell me, well, what was it? He said it was the moment of her greatest triumph, because she entered into heaven sinless. She had conquered Satan. She had fought the good fight. She had run the good course, as St. Paul says. She had a perfect life. Now, think about what this means. If Our Lady never sinned, and if she was immaculately conceived, which means she was in the state of grace, It meant that every single time she made a choice, she did two things. She increased how much grace she had, because she merited an increase in grace, which is, we can do that too, but she did this with every single time she made a choice, every time. See, the reason we're not as holy as she is because of the fact that we commit sin, and so as a result, we're not, our choice doesn't increase this merit. The second thing is every single time she made a choice, she increased her virtue. Her level of virtue is so far beyond any of ours. It's just, you can't, it's just ridiculous to even talk about it. So when people say, well, Our Lady was just like us, I'm like, oh, shut up, right? And that's just people trying to make themselves feel better that they're wretched, right? Okay. Our Lady, that meant that when she entered into heaven, she had the plenitude of all of the virtues, every single virtue, all 64 of them, she had them perfectly. And they were so far beyond ours, because as you build in virtue, it just keeps increasing, increasing, increasing. This is why St. Louis Marie de Montfort says that Our Lady's, he said, a single sigh from Our Lady is more meritorious than all the martyrdoms, all the prayers, all the sufferings, and all the good works of all of the saints combined. That's what we're talking about. This, in fact, the saints say that her level of sanctifying grace in her soul outstrips the totality of all intelligent creatures. That means if you totaled up all the sanctifying grace from all the angels and all the saints, it would not reach her degree of sanctity. That's where she's at. And yet her humility was absolutely perfect. Okay, back to this wounded part. She perfectly submitted. She was willing to sacrifice herself. She never counted herself the personal cost in every single time God asked her to sacrifice. So when Christ stood before her in the fourth sorrow, she didn't even think of herself. She was only thinking of him. When she's standing beneath the cross, it's the same thing. So with this angel, so I said, well, then the most glorious moment must have been the fact that she was crowned queen of heaven and earth. He's like, no, it's not. I'm like, well, what is that? He said, that's the moment of her greatest honor. Now, that makes a lot of sense, because honor is the praise or recognition for excellence. When God crowned her as queen of heaven and earth, he was manifesting to everybody in heaven, and we'll see it later, but he was manifesting to everybody in heaven, showing to them her perfection, her excellence. She is different from every one of us in that regard. She suffered more than we did, too. One time, this one case, it's the only case I've ever had that when the demon said, I'm Satan, I actually thought he was telling the truth. Usually when they say that, you're like, yeah. I've seen him and you ain't him, right? And, but at a certain point, this woman's suffering right towards you. When you get close to liberation, sometimes intense suffering that the person goes through who's possessed is extraordinary. I mean, they're suffering a lot trying to get this thing out. And at a certain point, there's six stages of liberation in stage five that's in four parts. And then part two is they bargain. They go to God and say, you know, let me out. And he usually tells them no. Then the third part is, I call it the stage of the saints. This is when saints will actually appear to people, like St. Joseph, Our Lord, Our Lady, etc., will appear to them. And so during that suffering that she had right before she was liberated, Our Lady appeared to her and said, remember that I suffered more. And it completely changed her ability to suffer well. She realized the suffering I'm going through is nothing compared to what Our Lady suffered. But Our Lady was never wounded by it. And that's because she sacrificed her. She was willing to turn away from her own particular good, which basically meant what? She did not resist the pain that God was asking her to carry. She never resisted it. This is extraordinarily important when you're talking about healing. Because to heal, we have to be willing to go through pain, right? Anybody who's had like a knee replaced or gone through surgery knows that, you know, afterwards it's pretty brutal. Right. And if you're going to get to the point where you can walk well, you're going to have to go through a lot of pain to get to that point where you're going to have to walk well.
So Again, there's about 48 minutes left in this, including the Q&A. So go to the Sense of Fidelium YouTube channel to see the rest of it. Check it out. Anyways, thank you for being with me for this hour. God love you. Have a great rest of the week.